Welcome to Marriage and Money, a conversational podcast about personal financial topics aimed at improving conversations about money in your marriage so you can reach your dreams together. This is a weekly discussion brought to you by a seemingly financially incompatible couple bonded by the legal contract of marriage. My name is David, your favorite saver, and I'm joined by the trendiest spender around, Heather.
That's right. Being this trendy does not come cheap or free.
Oh, I can attest to that. Wow.
I don't think I've ever been called trendy, just for the record. So,
well, have you ever been called cheap either? No, you've never been called cheap. So,
thank goodness.
Yeah. Well, we have a great show planned for you today. Today, we are going to be talking about personal financial trends that are happening right here in the great US of A.
That's right. We thought, you know, it might be good to have a conversation about current events, what's happening in the world of personal finance, instead of just what we want to talk about. We're like, what's the rest of the world talking about these days?
Why should we talk about things we want to talk about on our podcast? That would be crazy.
That might not be what the rest of the world's got going on. So.
Right. Yeah. Let's talk about things we don't want to talk about. No, we want to talk about it. So I think we've probably covered a few of these things on other episodes, but you know, a lot of these things might not be a surprise to you, but it is kind of interesting, I think, to hear from outside sources. So we found an article from the AICPA. Have you heard of the AICPA?
I sure have. I used to be a member. I'm not around right now, so don't tell anybody.
So what does AICPA stand for, Heather?
American Institute of Certified Public Accountants.
You're right. Oh, good job. You hesitated for a minute.
I stumbled a little bit.
I was like, does she not know this? Like, I know the answer to this, and I've never been a member. Oh, well, anyway. So Heather's a finance person, accounting person, so of course, AICPA.
That's right. That's where we go for all our news. We're like, we want to know what's trendy. Let's see what the CPAs are saying.
Yeah, so the CPAs say there are a few trendy items, and I'll include a link in the show notes to this article that we're getting these items from, just so you know, we're not making this up.
But I do think it is interesting. Like, we're going to go through it, like you said, but I mean, we have covered every one of these topics on other episodes and multiple times. So wasn't really too much of a surprise, but yeah.
Not too much of a surprise, but I think it's what I like hearing and seeing articles like this or reviews like this is seeing like how much of America is headed in a certain direction. So when you hear about things like credit card debt, is that one thing? Oh yeah, I'm alone in this struggle, or is this something that a lot of people are struggling with, and is there a solution to it? So just understanding how big of an issue is it, or how big of a trend is it, I think is interesting for me. So that's why I'm excited to talk about it. So
right. So you said credit card debt, which happens to be the first item listed, right? So they state that credit card debt is rising.
Why do you think that's rising? So it says credit card debt is, this study said that credit card debt is now above $870 billion, which is the highest ever. Like, the U.S. has never held, consumer credit card has never been that high. So people are taking out and spending their credit cards more often, more than they ever have. And that, to me, is scary as someone that hates debt.
Right. So, I mean, I think it means, right, so people are still purchasing things. So I'm not sure. What I think is interesting is, like, there's more people, right? There's a bigger population. But are people making more purchases, or are they just purchasing more on credit without, you know, putting down, like, paying with it with cash or putting down a large payment, right? So, you know, and also, like, there's so many credit cards out there. There's so many rewards. Oh, we get cash back. Oh, I'm going to use these miles. It's going to pay for my vacations. Why wouldn't I? So, I mean, I don't know how many people are actually, like, paying off. Well, this is the credit card debt, but you know, a lot of people.
Clearly, they're not paying it off.
Right.
These are people that aren't paying it off at the end of the month. And I'm not necessarily a big fan of even doing that, because I think you're going to spend more on a credit card than you would if you were paying cash or paying on a debit card and seeing that right away. But in any event, yeah, carrying a balance, and that's $870 billion of balance. That's huge.
Yeah. Think of the interest on that, man. It's a lot of money being spent on interest.
And now this report doesn't get into what specifically are on those credit card bills. Like, I think that's, I would assume that's private information that they didn't have access to or can't publish. But you imagine a lot of that is probably things like dinners out. It's probably things like vacations, or it's things like furniture or whatever it is, depreciating. I'm not even gonna call them assets, depreciating items. And there's nothing.
It could be, or could be emergencies. I mean, you know, medical debt isn't covered in this, but I feel like that could be. A lot of people get surprised by big medical expenses, and the way they got to pay for it is with a credit card. But yeah, you're right. I mean, it's definitely probably buying something that the people can't afford, right? Because they're using credit for it, they're paying interest for it, they're not saving.
It could be an emergency. It could be they're putting the furnace repair bill on there. I get, like, not everything's just irresponsible spending, but the point is that it's a good reminder that, hey, this is a big problem, and it's clear that we as a U.S. culture have a problem with this. We have a culture of overspending, and we need to get our hands around it. And I think there's been an argument of, oh, it's not part of the culture. It's we've set up an environment where you have to overspend just to eat. And I don't know. Call me out of touch. I don't think that's the case. I think you can set your life up such where you don't have to have that, you don't have to have all this credit card debt in order to eat and have a roof over your head.
Yeah, and I know we're weirdos because we don't have credit cards. We don't like credit cards. I know that a lot of people use credit cards. And I think the point here is that if you're going to use credit cards, use them cautiously, right? So don't, you know, pay them off each month. Don't carry a balance on them. If you're not going to be able to do that, then don't spend your credit card on that thing. Like, don't use it. Try not to use it for emergencies. Try not to use it for those large purchases that you know you're not going to make at the end of the month. So if you have a credit card, it's a big responsibility, and we don't want you to get in trouble. We don't want you to add to this balance and become part of the statistic. It's like, use it responsibly.
And if you notice, oh gosh, I'm not able to pay the bill and that credit card balance keeps rising, it might be a good time to take stock of what is it that's driving you to spend that amount. And maybe it means you need to change where you live. Maybe it means you need to change what you're doing throughout your day, or what you're eating out, or whatever it might be that is driving up your monthly expenses. But you might need to make some life changes.
And they've got a cool calculator in here that helps you, like, if you want to say, I want to pay this off in 2 years, how do I do, what's my payment? So we'll put a link to the article so you can link out there. It's a pretty cool tool.
That is a cool tool. I took a look at it, and it tells you exactly how much you need to pay in order to pay it off. It's pretty awesome. Okay, so this next one on the AICPA list I thought was kind of scary, given that I'm the big saver. so this is about retirement savings, and they found that almost half of non-retired Americans, or no, more than half, like only like 54% are not confident that they're going to reach their retirement goals. So only 46% were confident they were going to reach their retirement goals. That is scary to me.
So I have a lot of questions around that, because it's like, first of all, do 100% of the people have retirement goals? Because I feel like that's step one, is like, what do I even need to save? Like, what's my retirement goal? What number am I shooting for? At what age do I want to get there? Like, I mean, we've struggled with that, and it's constantly moving and changing. So, I mean, that's great if people know that. But so part of it is like, do they even know, is it even a realistic goal that they're working towards?
That's fair.
And that could be playing into part of this confidence, like, I don't even know what I'm shooting for. Or they might have some like insane, I need $30 million to retire. And it's like, well, do you really? And they're like, probably not going to hit that, right? So it's like, I don't know. I need to understand more about that statistic, but I could see it is scary. It is scary because it's a big number that you're working towards, and you're going from having an income to not having an income and relying on this. So, I mean, it's scary. I mean, that's why you get so nervous.
And that is why I get nervous. So I'm not worried that I'm in retirement, I'm not going to be able to eat, or I'm not going to have a place to live. I know for a fact I'll be okay there. What I'm more concerned about is, will I have the lifestyle that I want to have in retirement? And that's more That's more what I worry about. And I think you bring up a very valid point that maybe the financial goals that are there are unrealistic. And so, yeah, maybe you're not going to reach an unrealistic goal. My guess is that's probably not what they had. And we'd probably, like you said, yeah, we'd have to drill into
No, you're probably right.
But my guess is that most people are like, their goal would be that they can retire, or that maybe that they're going to be able to retire and do a vacation a year, something. But who knows? I could be way off on that. But
no,
I
think you're probably right.
Just the fact that that many people are worried about retirement, I think, is concerning. And I think it connects well with the credit card topic that we just covered, because if you can't pay your credit card bills, you're probably not saving much for retirement or able to save much.
Well,
for
I mean,
retirement.
Basically what that tells you is you can't afford your life today while you're working. So how are you going to afford your life exactly. in the future if
exactly.
you're not even able to save for that
yes.
income that you're going to need to replace that isn't even covering your bills today, right?
Yes.
But and I
so,
think...
So getting a hold of your credit cards, getting that under control is the first step in fixing this.
Right. But I think also, like, it's never too early to start saving for retirement, all right? I mean, like, it's so crazy to think about. Like, I know people that, this was not me, but I know I've heard of people that even before they're, like, out of college or working, they're already starting to save for retirement. I mean, like, you basically start saving for retirement as soon as possible, right?
Well, that was me. I was the crazy guy in college with a Roth IRA, right?
Right. Like, I mean, that's amazing.
Second year in college, I set up a Roth IRA. I was like, yeah, I'm doing this.
But isn't that crazy to think about? Like, I mean, and not to scare people that haven't started. That's why I'm just saying, like, start. You just need to start. But it isn't too early to ever start.
No.
Because
no.
it's going to take most of your lifetime just to be prepared. So that's also probably why people aren't confident, because if people didn't start like you when they were 18 or whatever, it's like, oh my goodness, I'm never going to make it. Because the sooner you start, the better. I'm not trying to scare people. Like,
no,
again,
no.
If you haven't started, just start. But
for those of you maybe listening that are young, like, yeah, even if it's just $10 a month, like, it adds up. We had an earlier episode where we talked a little bit about saving for retirement. And I think I did the math on, like, $100 or something like that over 30 years. At a modest interest rate, it multiplies itself by 10 essentially. And so it's like, wow, you save $10 today, you have $100 in retirement if you just don't spend that $10 today. So like, oh yeah, that's a pretty good deal right there. And that's what I was thinking when I was 18 and putting money in my Roth IRA. I was like, yeah, I know this is not a lot now, but every little bit helps and it's going to grow my whole lifetime. And that's awesome. So I don't know. I got excited about that. And so it's never too early to start saving. Get that saving going. And 401ks are a great way. I think most of us who are employed, we have a 401k from our employer. And that is an awesome way to save, especially since employers also contribute to that.
Right. I mean, they make it super easy. They already have a program set up. You just have to literally sign up for it. And to your point that they're usually probably helping contribute as well. So why not? Don't leave that free money on the table.
And if you start it, I know that if you're just starting it now and you're used to a certain paycheck, it's going to feel like a pay cut when you start it, but you'll get used to that new pay rate. Just ease into it. Just up at a percent, ease into it. You'll get there. It's worth it. Stick with it. I promise you.
So the next one is a comment that fewer Americans are following a budget. So it said, that the percentage of Americans following a budget has declined, and that 1 in 4 Americans admit they do not pay all their bills on time, which kind of shocks me. But yeah. I guess, I mean, if you maybe don't have a budget, or you don't know where your money's going, or you don't know when it needs to go somewhere, I mean, I could see how you could get behind on that.
Yeah, that is bad. I mean, you need to, like... And again, like if you're not paying off your credit card in time and you're using, 17% interest or whatever on your credit card, again, you're probably doing that because you're struggling in other payments. And this really feels like bad planning. I know people can get themselves into bad situations, and maybe I'm sure several of you listening are going to think I'm being too harsh on this, but a lot of times this stems from bad planning early on, and bad planning snowballs. bad decisions snowball. Just like good decisions snowball and bring about more money, bad decisions snowball and suck away more money and suck away more money. And you go in this downward spiral. And it's real hard to get out of that. And I understand that's really hard to get out of, but you got to start making those good decisions.
Yeah. And I mean, I've stated that I'm not a fan of the budget, even though we do a budget and it's fine. I mean, it does help us, but I think it's not necessarily about the budget, but if you don't know what you're spending, if you don't know your financial situation, I've heard of people that like, I don't even know how much money we bring in, or I have no idea what the bills are. It's like, you need to get a handle of that. You need to know your financial situation. And we've done a lot of episodes on that, on like figuring out where your financial situation is, getting started on this. So it is really important, whether you want to do a budget or not, like you should understand where your money's going. Yes. What your obligations are.
You know, budgets are my favorite tool, so that's not a surprise. I think I say that almost every episode. I love budgets. So if you're not doing a budget, you should do one. It helps get your financial order, your financial world in order. It helps you make those good decisions.
Yeah, I mean, if you don't know where to start, if you're like, well, I don't even know how to go about it, a budget's probably the easiest. I'm not saying it's easy, but it's the best tool out there to get you to figure out where you're at, what you're spending.
And again, you don't have to get down to this nitty gritty detail level.
No.
Have some categories, start understanding where your money's going, confirm that's where you want your money going.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so helpful. Yeah. And then, okay. The next item on this list was car loan delinquencies.
Yikes.
So
this is delinquencies.
Delinquencies, not
so paying. Not car loans.
No, this is just delinquencies. 7 million Americans are 3 months behind on their car payments. That's wild, isn't it? I don't know. That feels like a lot to me. I mean, that's a lot. I don't know what the percentage is. I should probably look up what that percentage is. But
I think that kind of tells the story. I mean, I know people think we're crazy because we discourage people from taking out a loan on your car and paying cash. And I know people think that's crazy. I don't even know how you can even do that. But I mean, this is the point. Like when you go to get that loan, you're like, yeah, I can make the payment today. But that doesn't mean you can't make the payment tomorrow or something comes up. And it's like you have that obligation and you're on the hook for that.
Yes. Yeah. You were saying earlier, like a lot of those credit card bills could be medical expenses, right?
Right.
So you have a medical emergency. Now you're paying down that medical emergency. Oh, I ran out of cash. Now I go to my credit card. Oh, I don't have cash. So now I can't pay for my car loan. Now I'm delinquent on my car and I'm losing my car. And I have a medical emergency, and I have a credit card that I can't make payments on. Now your life is spiraling, your financial life is spiraling out of control. That is a bad place to be. And it would be, you could avoid it if you have a used, cheaper car.
Yeah, and I know like today, like the used car market is just insane, right?
It's
like
hard.
It doesn't probably even make sense to buy a used car for what the prices are, and there's not inventory. But I think the bigger point is like, just don't bite off more than you can chew, right? Like, yes. Just because, hey, I want this, or this has been a desire, or my friend's got this, or I should be. It's like, just be smart with it, right? Like, don't get into over your head on this area, because this is kind of like housing, what we talk about. Like, it's really easy to go up in housing pretty quickly, and banks are more than happy to loan you probably more than you should be. I think the same thing is true with cars. It's really easy to be like, you know, oh, well, we could do this base model, or oh, for not that much more, I can get this one with all the bells and whistles. And so just be wise, try to use self-control and restrain yourself to like not get in over your head so you don't become part of this statistic.
Great advice.
Okay, so the next one, which we've talked about a lot, I think we talked about recently, is that Americans are lacking emergency preparedness. So, it's the statistics is kind of scary too. It says if faced with an unexpected expense of $400, so $400, something comes up. I don't even know what feels like things are way more expensive than $400, but
yeah, it seems like emergencies are always more than $400. Yeah.
But anyway, $400, 4 in 10 adults would either not be able to cover it or would cover it by selling something or borrowing money for $400. And like we always thought, or like if you hear Dave Ramsey, he always says you should start out. You need to have $1,000, and I honestly think that's too low, because I do think most emergencies
think
are at least $1,000 or more and it wipes you out. So, I mean, I know that's really hard, but like it is like that can be devastating. And if you don't have that money, it really puts you in a difficult situation, right?
Yeah, that is hard. So you need to have that emergency fund. Like because emergencies, like I was explaining in the last example with the medical emergency, it's your one emergency. You don't want to be one emergency away from a downward spiral, and a little bit of an emergency fund, a little bit of an insulation there, helps insulate you from that. You need to have that in place.
Yeah, and this isn't even talking. I mean, we talk about having 2 to 3 months of expenses, which is a lot of money, and that's like the ideal situation. But this is saying 40% people cannot afford $400. So at the very least, like try to at least have, you know, $1,000, couple thousand dollars stashed aside for these things, because
I mean, I know people that spend families spend more than that in a month on groceries. And like,
so you're saying don't eat for the month or what?
No. What I'm saying is it's kind of crazy because for $400, people are spending that on groceries. They're spending that money. Like it's not a lot of money is what I'm saying. $400 is how much of, you know, a monthly budget on groceries could be. And so an emergency, the amount of your grocery bill wipes you out. Like that's a scary place to be. Yeah. I think that point's been driven home. I didn't mean to. I'm just shocked. I've been shocked by that number.
Yeah.
It's still hard for me to believe. Okay. This last one that I wanted to touch on, or that we're going to talk about today, is around student loans. So apparently as student loans have continued to grow, so, you know, student loans have been in the news a lot lately, specifically with debt forgiveness programs and such. But student loan debt, at least at the time of this study, was at $1.57 trillion. That is a lot. That's a lot of money. That's quite a bit more than even the credit cards by a couple factors. And this study found that 8 in 10 adults with student loans, so 81%, make financial or personal sacrifices to meet the monthly payment. Those are things like putting off retirement savings or not replacing a car when they think they should, or, you know, kind of taking care of some things, some fundamental things they're having to put off because of these student loans. And I mean, a student loan is a loan. A student loan is debt.
I know. I feel so bad about these loans.
Debt
because
is bad.
It's like, you know, you're just on your own. You're just starting out on your own. You've got your first job, you know, like, and to just be saddled with that big debt around your neck. It's just like, I feel so bad for, you know, young adults coming out and having that. And I know school's a lot of money. And it's like, how do you save for that when you're 18 years old, Heather? Like, that's crazy. And we've had episodes on this, on trying to find free money, trying to find scholarships, trying to take advantage of as many programs, trying to do it as cheap as possible. But I just, yeah, this one really breaks my heart because I just hate to think of, you know, these people with their whole future ahead of them. And it's like,
you're coming out of school with chains around your ankles.
Right.
That's not a good place to start. So I mean, I've said in the past, I'm not a fan of student loans. They're like the only loan that can't ever be wiped clean. Like you can go bankrupt and you still have student loans. You can't get rid of them.
Yeah. So, and I mean, there are like employers and different programs where they'll, you know, if you work so many years,
right.
And we did a whole episode on this. So there are ways to help with it, but it's just, yeah. I mean, try to reduce that as small
be
as possible.
Careful.
Yeah,
careful with
exactly.
Your student loans. Like don't mess around with them. It is. Student loans are scary, and they're like the scariest loan you can get. And oftentimes they're people's first loan they get. The first loan people get signed up for is probably the scariest, scariest loan. And yeah, the terms are longer. You don't have the timelines maybe that you do on other loans, but they scare me. I am scared of student loans. I'm glad I avoided them.
So I think we covered some good topics there, and hopefully we want you to continue this conversation with your spouse or significant other. So which, if any of these trends that we talked about, are you a part of? Are there any actions that you need to take from the tips that we shared to start moving in a better direction? To become, I guess, less trendy in this area.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, try to avoid the trendy.
So, David.
Heather.
Were you surprised that something maybe was missing from the list that you thought, hey, I thought that this would show up? Was, you know, was there a personal financial trend that you thought, hey, this should have been covered? I'm surprised that it wasn't.
Yeah, I would say pretty much any personal finance trend that was positive. So
that's true. This was a very negative article.
This article was incredibly negative. And, you know, good things are happening. And one good trend that I just want to call out, because I don't want to end this, I don't want to end on a downer. So one positive finance trend, I think, is the expanding of investment options for people. So I think about like Robinhood, and you know, I've never used Robinhood or any of these other apps, but I think it's really cool that it's been made super easy, or much easier, for the average person to just go in, buy a stock, sell a stock, and not have to think about all the details behind that. It just happens. And to not have to worry about the fees, and they've just kind of made it super easy. I think that's awesome, because it in the long term, I hope this means that the market is more representative of the average person rather than just, you know, the hedge fund investors or the investors. Anyway.
That is so crazy, because we did not talk about this, I swear, but that is exactly what I was saying, or my notes. Like, I was going to say the same thing. Like, I think one cool trend is that I do think more people are investing on their own. Yes. And for exactly that reason, like, there's internet tools, there's podcasts, there's books, there's so much more information out there. And it's easier for people to invest. Back to your point, like 20 years ago, like, you had to go through a firm. I mean, you had traders on the floor. That doesn't happen now, right? Like, this is accessible to pretty much anybody who can get on the internet, right? Which everybody has pretty much a cell phone today and can do this. And so,
right. And I'm thinking even back to when I started my, just talking about in college, when I started my Roth IRA, I did that on the internet, but it was not clear. It was so much harder to do it back then. This is circa 2000, right? 99, 2000. It was so much harder to do it on the internet of 1999 than it is to do it on the internet of 2022.
Yeah. And I just think that's really awesome. Like you said, I think it's really neat that the people investing is more representative of the world and in the United States and different, you know, yes, the world. So
exactly.
I think that's a really cool trend, and I'm excited to see where that continues to go, you know, from here.
Yeah.
So
the best time to start investing is always now, and that's never been more true. And it'll probably be even better tomorrow or in the next couple few years. But, well, I think that about wraps up our conversation for today. Remember, you can always email us at marriageandmoneypodcast@gmail.com or message us on Instagram at marriage.and.money. Thanks again for joining us this week. And remember that whether you're a spender or a saver, your best financial life lies somewhere in the middle.